Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on our conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. The crux of the show today is we're going to be asking the question, since long-term storylines seem to slowly be returning to professional wrestling, how the fans are going to react to that. Because as we've discussed on this show many, many times, I think the fan base has somewhat changed. And I think the fans of yesteryear who were used to and appreciated long-term storylines have somewhat been replaced with people who want instant gratification and they want the storylines to be quick and then on to the next thing. Now, we're seeing that Triple H specifically is one of those people who I think still believes in long-term storytelling. And it's being played out in two various ways in the WWE. The first one is the Bloodline, whose story has been a long and complex one. I mean, we go back to the beginnings where Jey Uso was extremely volatile and opposed to what Roman Reigns was doing. And Roman Reigns slowly brought him into the fold. And he was his right-hand man. Jimmy Uso at the time was out hurt. And when Jimmy Uso came back, Jimmy Uso was the volatile one who told his brother, this is not the right way. This is not the way to go. But little by little, the story progressed. And Jimmy Uso was also brought into the fold. And then the story took a rather odd sort of a turn where obviously Paul Heyman was involved and there was a potential backstabbing by Paul Heyman with Brock Lesnar. And then the odd thing came, Sami Zayn. And little by little, Sami Zayn, who was supposed to really play a very minor part in this, has become one of the more major parts of it. And I want people to understand something because I think this is probably going to get lost on the newer fan. You wouldn't have these exact same emotions that you're feeling one way or the other for Jey Uso, for Solo Sikoa, for Jimmy Uso, for Roman Reigns, or Sami Zayn had that long-term storyline not been in place. Case in point. Everyone says to me, oh, God, I don't care about Hit Row. And the Liga de Fantasmo, I don't even care about them. Yeah, you know why? Because they were brought in as a group. They were not brought in as individuals. They were never really fleshed out as who they are. They were just thrown in and said, here they are, accept them, they're good wrestlers. Here they are, accept them, they're going to put on good matches. And we're saying, but who are they? Why are they here? What's their point? What's their deal? What's their shtick? And we're not given any of it other than, well, we're rappers and we're a group of like individuals who act like the Mexican mafia. It's not good enough. The Bloodline wouldn't have been good enough if it was just, yeah, it's all the Samoans. No, they fleshed it out. They made every single person in that bloodline different. They made every single chapter of that story significant. So then they can build on the chapters by saying, remember the chapters that came before it. They can hearken back to what they did before. And you know how Jimmy Uso is. You know how Jey Uso is. You know how Roman Reigns is. And, of course, the long-term storylines with Sami Zayn before this, you know how Sami Zayn is. So you know how their reactions are going to be, or at least you anticipate what their reactions are going to be before they do them. That's the beauty of long-term storytelling, is that you fleshed out a character. Hit Row are not characters. Not right now. Hopefully they flesh them out. The League's not characters. Hopefully they flesh them out. But right now they're just people in a ring. You can say, oh, they're rappers. I get it. Oh, yeah, they're like a Mexican mafia. I get it. But there's nothing that indicates any of that because you haven't given them time. So when fans say, well, it's taking forever to get to the point is it never ends. It just changes. It evolves. A soap opera never ends. Loose ends get wrapped up sometimes, and storylines get wrapped up, but new ones develop as the old ones are being wrapped up. There are people who are on soap operas for 30 years, same exact characters, and they just keep getting involved in different and new storylines that hopefully grasp your interest. This now is what the WWE is attempting to do with some. I think Triple H is walking a thin line. I think he's saying, well, I'm going to do this with a couple of my athletes. And then a few, I'm just going to do the instant gratification thing. It doesn't matter. You're a good wrestler. Just get in there and wrestle. That's what some people want to see. They don't want to see long-term storyline. They just get in there and wrestle. So I think he's trying to satisfy both. But in doing so, I think he's breaking one fundamental rule of professional wrestling, and that is, you have to connect with an audience. And the only way you can connect with that audience, you can be as good a wrestler as you want to be. Dean Malenko was a fantastic wrestler. He never connected with the audience. You have to flesh out their characters. You have to allow the people to see who they are. And then you never know. You never know who's going to be your star. I'm sure the people, and I'll make a TV analogy, I'm sure the people who invented or wrote or produced Happy Days in their wildest dreams never thought that a minor character that they had written to be the neighborhood hoodlum for fun and amusement and a one-liner every so often would be the focal point of their entire show within a season. But it happened, and the character of Arthur Ponzarelli became not a bit player. He became the symbol of the show. Same thing can happen in wrestling. But not if you don't give them the opportunity to flesh those characters out. So, Mike, this is why I think we're seeing the great success with the Bloodline, is because this has been given probably the most time and the best overall buildup, little by little, bit by bit, of maybe anything in the WWE in the past 10 years.
Right. And think about this. Here's another thing to think about with this stuff. What was it, about a year ago, whatever, there was a poll that was out there that said, that talked about the average age of wrestling fans and what it was. And the average age is somewhere in the 40s, maybe 50s, right? Which is, oh, the older wrestling fans, which is the guys who, the people who enjoy the storylines. Yeah, they like to see good, you know, good wrestling matches and stuff, but they enjoy the storylines. They're more old school type fans. And you're right.
Right.
What did we say about Sami Zayn after that whole thing with Mr. Jackass there? His career is over, right?
Right.
You know, and now look at him.
Well, see, here's the thing. I still think to a certain extent we're right about that, and here's why. Is he contributing greatly to the Bloodline storyline? Yes. He absolutely is. He's making it much more fun and much more interesting. And we'll talk about the segment they did a little later. But is he actually making people think he's a better wrestler? Is what he's doing on the mic with the Bloodline putting him over as a world-class wrestler? No, the answer is no. He's a clown. So he's the equivalent of R-Truth. He can make you laugh, and he can contribute to a skit or a vignette very well, but there's going to be no serious talk of him being a champion, I doubt, because if there was, you don't drop matches to, the Brawling Brutes. You don't get pinned on a regular basis. There's going to be a feud between him and probably Jey Uso. There might even be something with Roman Reigns, but it's not going to be anything serious because Sami Zayn has not been built to be a serious wrestler. Sami Zayn has been built to be a comedy relief wrestler. Sami Zayn has been built to be Santino Marella and R-Truth and some of the people who are just in there for laughs. And that's fine, but I don't know if it necessarily helps his career if he wants to be taken as a serious wrestler, because he's not being. Fans like him, so they say, I hope he wins. Well, that's good. That's one good positive thing. But it's not going to help. Just like they like R-Truth. Just like they've liked so many quote-unquote comedic characters who they thought was funny or cool. So I don't know if that helps Sami Zayn. It helps the bloodline because it gets them more airtime, number one. Number two, it absolutely solidifies each and every one of the characters, with Jimmy Uso kind of leaning toward my brother's not, being a team player at this point. Jey Uso probably or maybe being right, saying, I don't know why we're trusting Sami Zayn. Solo Sikoa kind of just being like, whoever helps us is fine. And Roman Reigns, perhaps for the first time since the bloodline has started, might be having the wool pulled over his eyes by somebody clever. So there's an interesting dynamic there. But the reason there's an interesting dynamic there is because you fleshed out every single character. That's why. If you started a TV show and you had two characters that were interesting and all the rest of the characters involved with them were dead boring, that show's not going to last just because you have two interesting characters. Not going to happen. You need the backup cast to be interesting. You need the secondary storylines to be interesting. You need to have everybody interested or at least anticipating reactions. Don't believe me? Let's go to that skit for a minute. The moment Jey Uso said, I don't give a damn what the tribal chief thinks, what the whole audience do? They started chanting, you fucked up. Now, that means they anticipated that Roman Reigns' reaction to that was going to be very, very, very bad. Why did they anticipate that? Because they have built up that Roman Reigns will not tolerate any insubordination from even his family. Had they not built that up ahead of time, you don't get that moment. That's why I say it's very important the things that come before be brought back into the fold for the things that are currently going on. And they're doing a very good job with that, Todd, this time around with the bloodline.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, about this whole thing with Sami Zayn. Reminds me the Eugene character being funny. And like you said, the other night on SmackDown, they got the Usy chant. And you would notice with Jey Uso was trying not to laugh on camera. Him and Jimmy in the background and Paul in the background.
We'll talk about that. We'll definitely talk about that in a minute because that's absolutely true. No question about it. And a lot of people said, well, that hurts it. I think that hurts it. I don't necessarily think that hurts it. There was a time when they probably all would have been punished for that. There was a time when breaking character like that, people would have said, what are you doing? The backstage rub on that would have been not good. But I think in this modern era, and even the fans' reaction to it, I think it's fine. I think the problem is it's endearing. How do I put this? When you're a writer and you're writing something big, you're writing a big climactic finish to a novel, or you're writing a big fight scene or something. And if you go back in your movie history and your novel history, you'll see this is true. The author will sometimes create a character that's very likable, very easy to laugh with, very amicable, and someone who you really say, I really like this character. This is a cool character. He's fun. He's harmless. That character's going to get killed. The reason that character's going to get killed is because then the reader or the watcher of the movie or whatever says, God damn it. And instantaneously now, the protagonist of the film, the hero, is the guy you're rooting for. Because you then say, oh, well, that was one of my favorite characters, and or that, you know, that was pointless that he killed him, and why did that happen? You're pissed. So now you want to see this someone get revenge. That's what Sami Zayn's going to get used for. He's not going to be the guy that knocks off Roman Reigns. He's going to be the guy that gets destroyed by Roman Reigns eventually so that somebody can say, God damn it, who the hell is going to finally take this guy out? That's the way that usually works. Now, I'm not going to say that he's not going to be the guy that might eventually reunite his team with Kevin Owens and take the belts from the Usos. That's possible. But this type of character, this amicable, lovable, happy-go-lucky, smiling, joking character, they never end up the guys that succeed. It's the Drew McIntyres. It's the, you know, Braun Strowman's, the people who just, you're like, those are the guys, they're going to kill you. Those are the guys you build to take those guys out. And you build them by taking the lovable characters, the amicable characters, the relatively harmless characters, and feeding them to the bad guys so that you get heat. At least that's the way I see it, Mike.
That's the way I see it as well. But here's the thing. We talk about long-term storytelling, right? And I'm looking at Days of Our Lives Wiki, and it's like they've been on the air since 1965. Now, they started out as a 30-minute thing from 65 to 75, but from 75 to today, they've been an hour program, and that's what, 50 years? You know, as storytelling. And look, long-term storytelling, think about this. There's a recent horror movie that just came out that they're touting as the end of the series, and that's the Halloween Ends or whatever I think that's what it's called, Halloween Ends,
yes.
With Jamie Lee,
yes.
Curtis, which they're touting as the end of the series because finally Jamie Lee gets over on Michael Myers,
right.
The character she plays gets over on Michael Myers and ends up killing him or something. I think that's the way that goes. But that's long-term – that's what we're talking about, long-term storytelling, right?
Especially when it's weekly. I mean, the soap opera has a little bit – I don't even know if soap operas exist anymore. I guess they do. But a soap opera had a harder job because they were daily. Every single day. And I didn't tape them daily. They taped them probably for the whole week in one day or 2 days or whatever. But – daily, they had to put on a show, and some of them were an hour long. That's, you know, 5 hours a week with the same characters, and you had to keep them interesting. So I know a lot of people laughed at that and said soap opera writers are for old housewives and young girls and whatever, but those were really good writers, and I'll tell you why they're really good writers. They had a tough task. They had a cast of characters, and they were told, you got to keep these characters interesting every single day. So these writers, being smart, said, we can't tell a story too quick, because if we have to tell a million stories a year, that's just too much. So we're going to have to stretch these stories out, and we got to make these stories last 6 months, 8 months. Sometimes, which means they got to be paced very slowly, but they got to be paced in a way that people are still anticipating them. So you can't pace them so slow that people say, well, this is just boring and I give up. You got to feed them a little bit more each week, each day, whatever it happened to be, until you say, you keep anticipating, more is going to be told, more is going to be told, more is going to be told. The job of a soap opera writer, very difficult, very difficult. And it's more in tune with what a wrestling writer has to deal with. They have a cast of characters the same way a soap opera does. They have more of a weekly or twice a week type situation, so they have a little bit more leeway, but they also have 3 hours and 2 hours, not a half hour or an hour. And yes, a lot of it is taken up by actual physical wrestling, but the storyline still has to be there, and they have to make them interesting, and they have to give you a little bit more information, and they have to know this one's not working. This one is working. This one is starting to take off. Let's see how it goes. They have to anticipate and say and be willing to say, fans aren't going to watch this. We got to wrap this storyline up. I know we had 3 months of it planned, but it's not working. So let's get rid of this and move on to something else. And it's done all the time. Wrestling didn't used to do that. They would just stubbornly cling to it and say, well, you'll like it eventually. No, we won't. So you have to be ready to call those audibles, which the WWE is now doing. Sami Zayn wasn't supposed to be a major part of this. He said himself in an interview when the idea was first pitched, the idea was, since I kept calling myself the locker room leader, I was going to try to get in good with the head of the table. Eventually, we were going to have a amicable relationship, but nothing that was really like every week I was with them or anything. It was just, you know, here and there. Well, what did that turn into? As soon as they found out, no, the fans like this, then they called an audible and said, well, put the rest of the plans we had with Sami Zayn on hold. This is working. We think we can write more things around it. Let's go with it. Good for them. They did the same thing with Riddle and Orton. Good for them. That's good writing. That's what a writer does. But you also have to be willing to say, this isn't working at all. And if we can't pull it out of the fire in a couple of weeks, we're going to have to end it. Or it's just going to hurt our ratings and hurt our show, not help it. I think the WWE is going to be facing that really soon with this Miz and Dexter Lumis thing. Fans don't care about it. And you've trapped yourself into a corner. This angle reminds me so much, Mike, of Eric Rowan and his pet that nobody knew what it was, and it turned out to be a freaking Spirit Halloween animated spider. No one in the world wanted that to be that. No one in the world thought that was a good idea. And they stretched it out, and halfway through it, you begin to realize this is going to stink. No matter what's in there, it's not going to be good. Whether it's alive, whether it's a figment of his imagination, whatever the hell it is, you can't pull this out of the fire because there's nothing you could say is in there that would work. And when the writers finally figured that out and said, we've written ourselves into a corner, the only way out of it was what they took. And again, you should have bailed on that earlier and you wouldn't have had to worry.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. But the big thing that came out of that whole segment with the Bloodline is, and Sami Zayn was the line when he called him, I guess we can get to it now. Sami Uso, check the reaction of that crowd.
Absolutely, it was a tremendous reaction. And again, when the WWE hears this, then if they're smart, they say, okay, to the writers, you had them totally breaking off from everybody next week or 2 weeks from now? Yeah, let's forget that. There's going to be a slow burn. But as a writer, see, this is the thing. I'm coming to you from a perspective of someone who has written. I've had published stories. And I'm telling you that if I'm a writer in WWE right now, I'm saying there's many ways we can go with this. So let's see which way is the optimal way. Let's see which way is the way that the fans really are going to eat up. You could certainly have Jey Uso be the hero of this whole thing. And Sami Zayn is a con man who conned the whole entire family, including the head of the table, but he didn't con Jey Uso. And Roman Reigns realizes, dude, you were the only one, man. I should have listened to my blood, not Sami Zayn the snake. Could do it that way. You could also do it that Jey Uso is a hothead who becomes jealous of Sami Zayn, jealous of the fact that he can't live up to Roman Reigns' expectations, and bolts from the family, saying, I'll do this on my own from now on. And him and Sami Zayn get into a bitter feud. You could have Roman Reigns finally see the light and destroy Sami Zayn. You could have Sami Zayn bring people in, more people into the fold. There's a million ways you could do this. The question is, how do you get the most juice out of the orange? We always used to give that expression on this show. You can't take one squeeze of an orange and throw the orange away. You're just wasting the orange. So if you want to get all the juice out of that orange, you've got to figure out, how do we make the most out of this situation? Well, the dynamic is very clear. The dynamic is Roman Reigns is starting to side with Sami Zayn over Jey. So if you want to keep that going, then our options are Jey bolts from the family, or costs Roman Reigns the title, or advocates the belt, or whatever it happens to be, and gets into a big feud with Sami Zayn, or Jey Uso is right, Sami Zayn's a backstabber, and the rest of the family come to realize we were flim-flammed by this guy, who now has some backup because he's not tough enough. He's not been promoted as being tough enough to deal with the Usos one-on-one. I mean, Sami Zayn has lost to Johnny Knoxville. I told you that was going to hurt. Sami Zayn is now lost to the Brawling Brutes. Is there anybody who expects Sami Zayn is going to beat Roman Reigns? No. Now, he could beat Jey Uso, but I don't even think he could beat Solo Sikoa. Now, Solo has been very, very strong on Sami. So they could both break off even and say, we're going to go our separate ways and eventually challenge the Usos. There's a lot you could do, but you have to sit down and you have to figure out, how do we get the most juice from the orange? And Mike, too often the WWE didn't do that. I kind of think they might be doing that now.
They might very well be doing it. And I want to go back to the whole Sami Uso thing. They squeezed that orange for that juice, and juice came out of it in that reaction from the crowd. So what if it becomes another character that Sami Zayn can play, where that character is a much stronger wrestler than, you know, than Sami Zayn character is, right? He's more, you can take that character, Sami Uso character, more seriously as a wrestler. They could do that, you know?
Absolutely could do it. Absolutely could. And there's one more storyline you could bring out on this, and that is that when the time comes, Roman Reigns could turn vicious on Sami Zayn and literally say, did you really think you were fooling me? Did you honestly think in your wildest imagination that you were an Uso or an honorary Uso or anything close to it? We used you as an idiot. We couldn't let Jey, we knew Jey was right, but we couldn't let Jey spoil it because we were using you, Sami. Jey was the one who was tipping it off because I didn't tell anybody. So they might have thought I was serious, but I wasn't. I knew who you are. I know what you are. Then when he's kicked to the curb and everybody feels sorry for Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens could say, hey, well, what did I tell you? Was I not the guy who told you you were being used? Remember that time on SmackDown where I came to SmackDown and asked you to come help me with my Ezekiel problem and you told me that you were an honorary Uso and the Usos really cared about you and I told you they're using you, I was right. And there you go. You've got your tag team and you've got your guys geared up for revenge to try to take the titles away from the Usos. And has nothing to do with Roman, so that's good because neither one of those guys should be anywhere near Roman fighting Roman Reigns. I keep hearing the knee-jerk reaction of fans. Oh, it's got to be Sami Zayn winning the Royal Rumble to go against Roman. No, come on. You really want that? Sami Zayn's not going to be your champion. Knock it off. He's a comedy act right now. But you can get the sympathy of the fans from that. And he could be tag team champion with Kevin Owens because then it takes a much more serious turn. So this is what long-term storytelling does for you folks. That's why I'm trying to explain to people, and we're going to lead into this segment now. People have already written me saying, the Bray Wyatt thing's getting old. The Bray Wyatt thing's not as interesting as it was. Starting to lose confidence in the Bray Wyatt thing. And I'm saying, why? Let them tell the story. You're not going to care about what happens until you tell the story. This is why horror films in the 80s used to be so funny. It was a whole bunch of kids loose in the woods, none of whom you liked or even cared about or knew anything about. And they were all going to get killed except the one girl, probably, and you didn't care. And the reason you didn't care is you didn't know them. But if they took the time, which they never did and horror fans wouldn't allow, to really flesh out characters where you said, I hope this poor person doesn't get killed. I hope this person who's taking care of her sick mother and this is her only time she gets to go out and have fun, the whole, you hope she doesn't get killed. I hope the girl that, you know, the guy who's going to propose to the girl on this trip, I hope he doesn't get killed. Then you care. And it makes it a much better movie. Because then when certain people do get killed that you care about, you say, fuck. And you anticipate the ending where you say, somebody's going to take care of this person. That's wrestling. That's wrestling, folks. It's not a flippy-flop move from the top rope. Not an hour Iron Man match. Where what I've just described to you, that's professional wrestling. If you don't think that's professional wrestling, you're wrong. It's not a matter of opinion. That is a fact. That is what professional wrestling is. Without it, then it's just a bunch of guys pretending to fight, and that's not fun. Storylines have to be there. The fleshing out of the characters have to be there. Is there any reason why I should care if B-Fab gets attacked? The answer is no. Why am I rooting for her above Zelina Vega? The answer is I don't know. B-Fab comes off as an egotistical, arrogant, I'm better than the rest of the world, we're big stars and everybody else is nobody. That's not a good thing for a face. The rest of Hit Row come off as jerks, obnoxious. That's not a good thing for faces. Phantasmo comes off as these group of people that you can't even tell apart. They're interchangeable. That's not good. You never took the time to flesh these characters out. You should have. That's why they're not going to be successful unless you start to do that. And that's why people are saying, I don't like it when Hit Row's on. I don't like it when the Phantasmo's on. Yeah, of course you don't. Because you have no reason to root for them. You have no reason to root against them. They're just generic characters. Nobody can be generic and get themselves over. You've got to give them an opportunity not to be generic. Now, so funny because Sami Zayn, you know, El Generico, well, he's the farthest thing from generic Todd, and that's why fans like Sami Zayn. You've given him so much time to become a character.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when Sami Zayn first came on the main roster, he's just like not cutting it for anybody, not from me, not from you. He was just plain, mostly.
Yeah, I mean, when he first came over and he was going to do the good guy thing and he had the short hair and all, Sami Zayn was a good wrestler with a below-average look, who was good on the mic, but, you know, didn't really have that much to say. It was Kevin Owens who was going to be the big star because Kevin Owens had a better than a generic type look. Had a chip on his shoulder, came in right away and got fleshed out for being I'm a real champion, pinned John Cena. I mean, you know, come on. They were giving him a big push. So, yeah, Kevin Owens was a bigger deal. Now it's Sami Zayn who's a bigger deal. But that's because you gave him so much time. You gave him the whole conspiracy theory thing, and every week he was on the microphone. We all, as individuals, got to know who Sami Zayn is. And because we got to know who Sami Zayn is, we kind of anticipate his reactions. We kind of anticipate what he might be thinking. And we feel like we know him, and because we feel like we know him, we relate to the character, and that's how you make somebody care. I will never forget a story. I'm a big fan of television. So I read a lot of books on television shows and old television shows, even that's well before my time. And I remember reading a online article about an old television show called I Love Lucy. And they said, well, we know we had a star in Lucille Ball. And we were skeptical about her husband because he was Cuban and he spoke with an accent. We didn't know if the American public would accept it. And we hired a couple of, you know, actors to play Fred Mertz and Ethel Mertz. And we thought, you know, they're good actors, but we'll see. The studio said our faith in it was, you know, So one day we got a whole bag of fan mail, which was not unusual. He said all shows got bags of fan mail back then. But he said the producer came in and said, this fan mail proved we are going to be a success. And when Desi Arnaz said, why? He said, none of these are addressed to Lucille Ball. None of these are addressed to Desi Arnaz. These are addressed to Ricky Ricardo, Lucy Ricardo, Fred and Ethel Mertz. And he said, well, what does that mean? He said, it means they care about your characters. They think you are those characters. You have now become real people to them. And when you become real people to your audience, you got them. And he was right. Sami Zayn is nothing like the character he plays on television. But you think you know him. That character you now believe is him. And because you believe that's him, you care about it. Roman Reigns is nothing like that character, but you believe it. Bray Wyatt is nothing like that character. I just saw him in a picture. He was walking through Walmart, and somebody asked him if he'd hold his baby and take a picture, and he's there with a big smile on his face holding the guy's baby. He's not who he is on television, but you believe he is. And that's the key. That's why I'm not sure about Karrion Kross. I don't believe he is who he is on TV. I clearly see he's playing a character. I clearly see it. And that's what worries me. I want to see those workers who I say, man, it's so easy to believe that's really them. You know how disappointed people are sometimes when they meet people from their favorite TV show, and they think it's really like the person they come to know. And they say, oh, he wasn't nothing like the character. Yeah, well, no kidding. You're playing a character, but you come to think, I know this person. That's how you get your audience, Mike, by making the fans believe they know you. The fans thought they knew Steve Austin. Now, Steve Austin might be a bad example because he's pretty close to it. Pretty close to the character he played. But you get my point. Sometimes they're not, but if they can convince you they are, and they make you think you know me, I am this guy, you've got him.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, for a long time, when you thought Superman, who do you think? Christopher Reeve, right? For a long time. Until you got Dean Cain, later on what's his name that played on Smallville and so on and so forth. And now, what's his name that just came back to playing the role for the movies. So that's when you got a guy that is so tied to one character that you can't see anybody else playing the role. You know,
right?
Throw out Bill Cosby as Heathcliff Huxtable, because that was based on his life, and it was called the Cosby Show, but he was called Heathcliff Huxtable. Any of these other things? I mean, Tim the Toolman Taylor, and later on his stint on this other show that he did, you know, the Last Man Standing.
All in the Family or Married with Children, any of those. But I'll give you one closer to the bone. Do you remember when they tried to bring back Razor Ramon and Diesel when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash left and they said, we own the rights to the character name, so we'll just make different people play the characters? And one of them was Kane playing the phony Diesel. How did that work? Not too well. Not too well. Now, was it because he was a terrible wrestler? Well, I guess not, because how famous did Kane become? So why didn't it work? Didn't work because we didn't believe it. We knew better. That's the key. When you watch Sami Zayn, there's a very real part of Sami Zayn's performance that's really him, but amped up to like 10. In other words, he can turn this character on. He understands this character. He is Ed O'Neill playing Al Bundy. He may not be anything like Al Bundy, but he sure as hell knows who Al Bundy is. Well, that's the same thing with Sami Zayn. He may not be anything like this Sami Zayn you see, but he sure as hell knows who this character is. And he's making you think, I really am. Didn't you ever hear these stories about some show where somebody was a kindly old doctor or a righteous, wonderful sheriff or something, and then they meet them in real life, and they're like, that guy's an idiot. He was very rude to me, or she was very rude to me, and you're like, oh, my dreams are crushed. I thought they really were that person. No, they're not. But if they make you believe that, they've got you. Just like my analogy with the old I Love Lucy show, they've got you. Sami Zayn's got you because you believe that's Sami Zayn. Roman Reigns has got you. You believe that's Roman Reigns. You've got a good bunch of actors in the bloodline. I remember a time when we said Paul Heyman can save this because Paul Heyman's so good on the mic. Paul Heyman doesn't have to say anything anymore. Paul Heyman's the weak link in this at this point. He's actually the weak link in this. That's how good the rest of the people are. You've got gold with this, and I know you're going somewhere with it. I say go as slow as possible. Keep it interesting. Baby steps. And I mean baby steps. Because right now the fans are eating it up. And there is no point in rocking the boat. No point at all. So wherever they're going with this, Todd, I think they need to go slow. Let the whole story play out. Get every drop of juice you can from that orange.
Well, you're absolutely right. Like you said about Paul Heyman when he first came in as his mouthpiece for Roman Reigns to save the character as a mouthpiece. Now you don't need it. Now you don't need him as a mouthpiece. He just there to hold the belt for Roman, and that's it 90% of the time.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't need to be saving every single skit because he's got people there, Todd, who can, you know, handle themselves. I think we lost Todd, so I will just say this. The Bloodline is the most captivating story you got here, folks, for it to be over so quick. Don't jump and say, oh, come on, this is getting boring. It won't. Let the writers do their thing. Let this play out. I don't know for sure if they even know where it's going. I think they knew where it was going at one point. Now I think, based on fan reaction and popularity, they may be taking a step back saying, hold the phone. Maybe our conclusion isn't the best one. And that's always a good thing, Mike, if you can, you know, change in midstream and say, based on fan reaction, you know, we got to change something.
Absolutely. And if you think about it, what have we been screaming for a while now? Now, granted, we know she's coming back, right, Naomi? We know she's coming back and probably relatively soon. But they could, with the way this thing is going, they could slow play her return. And yeah, you're going to want her back, but they can slow play her getting into the Bloodline if they're going to go that way, which I would assume at some point they will go that way. But they can slow play this because they're doing so well right now with Sami Zayn, you know.
The beauty of this Bloodline angle, Mike, is that they can keep this going for probably until well after WrestleMania, into the summertime. And then once they turn some of them or all of them face, which will happen, starts all over again. New storylines, new challenges to face, new drama, new comedy, new everything. It all starts over again. And it's like the writers get to wipe the slate clean and say, oh boy, we get another crack at this golden goose. That's the beauty of that. If you're a writer, you're salivating because you're saying, it's hard to screw this up. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. Eventually, they're going to flip them face, or some of them face at least. And when they do, here we go. We got a whole nother bonanza of things we can write for them. That's why when you see someone who has a good cast, writers want to write for that show so badly because it's so easy to write for those people. You'll hear writers say, oh, writing for these actors was just a dream job because you know that everything you write, they're going to make even better. You know every idea that you come up with, they're going to enhance. It's going to make you look like a genius. Well, that's the same way with wrestling. Somebody comes up with an idea, and these guys enhance it, and by the time it reaches television and it's that popular, you look like a genius. So, yeah, they're going to be chomping at the bit. The Bloodline is here to stay, folks, for a while. I think there might be a breakup or a separation or something, then they'll get back together. You have got a long-term soap opera here. You know how that works. A couple breaks up, and they get back together, and then the guy, they think he's dead, but he's not dead, and he comes back. And it takes years and years and years, but that couple is still around. Well, that's going to be the Bloodline. It's going to be the Bloodline. And there's a very good chance that when Roman Reigns retires, one of those guys is going to be the new head of the table. I think you've got a wrestling dynasty here for a long time. Now let's talk about Bray Wyatt, because, again, people have been saying, I'm starting to lose interest. I don't know why. Now, I don't know where this storyline's going. I'm not going to pretend I do. It seems to be very complex. And it seems to be involving characters that I'm not even sure are real. But let me give you my idea of what's happening. And if I was the writer, where I'd go with it. You've obviously seen Bray Wyatt come back and say, I'm just myself now. No mask, no nothing. Thankful that the fans wanted me back. Thankful that my work touched some people. And I know I've done some bad things. I'm probably going to end up doing more bad things. But this time, at least, I know I have you on my side. Then this character, Uncle Howdy, always seems to appear. And he calls him a liar. And he says, you're still wearing the mask. And you can't escape us. And you can't run from me. Now, there's two schools of thought. One is that Uncle Howdy is Bray Wyatt and is his alter ego. Remember, the Funhouse Bray Wyatt was supposed to be the guy who was basically on Ritalin. It's like, oh, as long as I'm happy and smiling all the time, my evil doesn't come out. But then when he can't fight it anymore, the Fiend comes out. Well, maybe the Uncle Howdy comes out. And Bray Wyatt is Uncle Howdy. But then we have the second school of thought, and I think this is more likely. That the group that Bray Wyatt's going to bring in, or that is going to be brought in, isn't going to be Bray Wyatt's group. It's going to be Uncle Howdy's group. And they want the old Bray Wyatt back. Because he was their de facto leader, and he's deserted them. And they're going to try to drag it out of him. And I think that's why the WWE has put Bray Wyatt down as a face and not a heel. They put Bray Wyatt down as the top face on SmackDown. I think the reason is this group that comes in is going to be very old Bray Wyatt-ish. And they are going to terrorize and torment and beat up and whatever Bray Wyatt for a while. Until Bray Wyatt becomes the Fiend again. And when he becomes the Fiend, he's going to take these guys out as the Fiend. Or take them on, at least, as the Fiend. Now, this is a good idea, and I'll tell you why. Keep Bray Wyatt for a long period of time. If you do this, this is 6 months, right? It keeps Bray Wyatt away from the title picture, which he doesn't need to be in. You can't put him against Roman Reigns right away. That's a bad idea. But it has him fighting a top faction where people will sympathize with him, and they'll keep saying, much like when you watch The Incredible Hulk, how long are they going to beat Bruce Banner until the Hulk shows up? Well, that's going to be how long are they going to torment Bray Wyatt until they make him snap. And when he does snap, the Fiend is going to come out, and they're going to be sorry they did it. That's where I think this is going, Mike. I could be wrong.
You could be wrong. And here's the deal. We're talking about who might be in this group. And there was rumors about maybe Barry Windham coming in as some sort of, like, manager or something, right? Well, there is another Windham that's out there that they could possibly bring in as well, and that's Barry's brother, Kendall. Would they be back in the far reaches of the back of their mind to do that? Possible. Anything's possible with this thing, right?
That's why I say we have to wait and see. Now, the one clue I had that it might not be Bray Wyatt behind the Uncle Howdy mask is that in the ear of Uncle Howdy is the exact same earring Bo Dallas wore. If you go back and look at the Bo Dallas videos of him shooting some promos and things, he always wore that earring. And that's the same earring that's on Uncle Howdy. Now, obviously, very heavily masked, and I don't know for the life of me how he could wrestle it. I'm assuming he can't. That's why I say I might be wrong, and it may just be Bray Wyatt's alter ego, or it may be a character that never, ever even steps into the ring. Because I can't see how you'd wrestle in that and not look like a complete dummy. See, that's the problem sometimes with cinematic things. For instance, let's take the movie Thor. Anybody who watched Thor understands one thing. If you were a fan of Thor in the comic book, you know what he wore. There is no way in God's green earth, no matter how good of a costume you design, that he could have wore that in that whole movie and not look like a total jerk going to a Halloween party. And they knew that. And that's why they didn't make him wear it. Well, the same goes true with this Uncle Howdy thing. It looks great in the vignettes. It's not going to look good when the lights come on in a wrestling match. I'm telling you, it's not. And that could be a mistake, unless the guy just takes off the mask, which could happen. But again, for the people who are getting frustrated and saying, oh, this is going nowhere and I don't like it, folks, it's going somewhere. Every week they've given you a little bit more. Now, this is the second or third week that Bray Wyatt has basically said, I want to just be myself. And this is the second or third time that he's been haunted by this Uncle Howdy saying, this isn't you, though. We've seen no more White Rabbit. We've seen no more of the Playhouse puppets. We've seen no mention of Sister Abigail. We've seen no mention of the Fiend. Just right now, Uncle Howdy and Bray Wyatt. Something's going to happen. You're going to get more characters involved in this. And this one, I do believe, was a long-term plan that they're taking step by step. Now, again, just like we said, if this starts to get boring, you're going to have to pick it up or you're going to have to change it up. You got to be willing to say, all right, maybe this isn't working so good. Let's do this, that, or the other thing. Now, I know a lot of people didn't want to see the Fiend back, and I know a lot of people did. The only way, if I'm a writer and you pitch this idea to me, I say, let this character, Uncle Howdy, whoever it happens to be, bring in a group of people to try to bring Bray Wyatt back into the fold. You once were our leader. You've defected. This isn't the real you. You belong with us. You belong back on the dark side with us. This new Bray Wyatt who's happy to be with the fans and talking like a normal person, this isn't you. This is a mask you're wearing. We're going to drag it out of you or we're going to beat it out of you. And little by little, as he has to overcome these obstacles and fall short, he slips more and more and more back into that. But instead of siding with them, he transforms himself back into the Fiend who decides, I'm not siding with you. I'm destroying you. Be careful what you wish for. You wanted the dark Bray Wyatt, you got him. But he's not on your side. That sounds good. The fans will root for him against this new dark group of whatever who beat the new Bray Wyatt out of him. Or you could have him literally have multiple personalities and be a guy who at some points in time, which we suggested way early on in the Bray Wyatt Funhouse run, sometimes he's a face. And he'll go out there and he's just a face. And then he has an alter ego that's a heel. So he can literally face anyone. There is no, well, he can only fight this person or that person. He can fight anybody on the roster. Just depends on what, you know, personality he's using. So there's many different layers to this, Mike. And I think fans are going to have to be patient if they want to get the most out of this. They've got to wait and let this play out.
Right. And think about this. Here's something else they could do with this. All right. He's having problems with these people, right? This group, we know this group is eventually going to show up, right? He's having problems with these people. Everybody thinks that when Rowan comes back, the next time we see Rowan, that he's going to be a part of this group, right? But
right.
What if Rowan and possibly even Braun Strowman, who's doing something different right now, but Braun Strowman says, Bray Wyatt's having problems, and Braun Strowman says, look, you need some help. You're trying to be a better person. You need some help. I'm here to help you. You know?
That's very possible, too. It could be a group against a group. There's no question. There's so much you can do with it that we can speculate all day. And still, we could be wrong about all of the things we're saying. But this is the good thing. If we were sitting here, the three of us, in a production meeting, we've just come up with three or four ideas. And now you say to yourself, well, what's the one that we're going to get the most out of? Well, it obviously depends. I mean, if you've hired Vincent and you've hired a couple other people to play these characters, you got to use them. And if you're going to use them, you're not going to use them to be a part of Bray Wyatt's family, because it seems like he doesn't want to have a family right now. It seems like the family's trying to draw him back in. It looks like that's where it's going with the Uncle Howdy. Well, if you're doing that, yeah, then you can save Eric Rowan. And remember, they also copywrote the name Uncle, Brody, right? Yeah. Why would they do that? Maybe somebody's going to come play that character with Bray Wyatt. So there's an awful lot of things that can happen here, an awful lot of things. Now, I do agree with some fans who are saying, I don't want to tune into SmackDown next week, which, by the way, is taped. We'll talk about that in a minute. It's already taped because they're going to Saudi Arabia, so they had to tape the SmackDown. After this SmackDown, they taped another one. I don't want to tune into SmackDown next week and just see another Bray Wyatt saying, I'm so happy to be here, and then Uncle Howdy saying something. Yeah, you're going to have to forward it a little bit more. Now, but they did forward it more this week. Last week, you didn't even hardly see the guy's face. This week, you clearly saw his face. So let's continue this and see what happens next time. As long as the story progresses, even if it progresses by a little bit, I'm willing to give it a chance. The moment it doesn't progress, like the Miz's storyline. Now, the Miz's storyline finally did progress with Johnny Gargano saying, well, you got this secret, and if you don't tell it. But up till then, it was just every week. Dexter Lumis attacking him, no reason. Dexter Lumis attacking him, no reason. He had him at his mercy, and he's still fine. No reason. Fans got sick of it. And now if they keep up with the, you have a secret, and I'm going to tell it, unless you tell it, unless you tell it, and it's week after week after week, and it doesn't advance anything. You could keep this storyline going, but you got to advance it a little at a time. You can't put it on a treadmill. If you put it on a treadmill, fans get sick of it. Paul Heyman was a genius when it came to that. His feud between Sabu and Taz that culminated in the very first ECW pay-per-view, the buildup was a year. Almost a full year in anticipation of that match. And fans did not grow tired of it. Fans grew more and more and more anxious to see it. So that's the job of the writers, Mike, and now we're going to see how good they are because I think they're going to be tested.
Yeah, they're going to be tested. I mean, look, at one point we were hearing rumors about the writers saying, we're coming up with these ideas, and these ideas are being shut down, right?
Yes.
They're being shut down by what's his name? By Bruce Pritchard or whomever, or they're getting up to Vince and they're shutting them down. Now neither one of those guys are there and Triple H is there, and maybe just maybe these writers that are currently there are giving Triple H ideas along with what's coming from the mind of Bray Wyatt, you know, or giving him some ideas, and he's listening to his writers.
Exactly. See, this is the thing. You have to understand the character, and nobody's going to understand the character better than the person who created it and played it. Then you've got to rein it in a little bit and say, well, some of these ideas, they're not going to work out on TV. It's going to be too much, or it's going to be too complex, or it's going to be too whatever, hard to pull off, financially not feasible, whatever. But, you know, you alluded to the Halloween movie. This is why nobody likes Halloween Ends, or very few people likes Halloween Ends. I'm not going to give any spoilers out, but you cannot say, okay, well, we're going to have the final movie of the series, and then say we're going to virtually ignore the main character, totally change him into someone who's pretty much weak, and expect fans are going to say, oh, that was a great ending. No, it's not a great ending. It's not a great ending because it never really felt like that was Michael Myers. It never really felt like it was a Michael Myers movie. These are writers who didn't listen to fans. These are writers who just said, we got a concept. It doesn't really involve Michael Myers that much, but at the end it will, and fans will love it. No, fans didn't love it. Fans are watching it saying, am I in a Halloween movie, or is this some movie about some dumb kid and his girlfriend turning psychotic? Bad idea. That's why I said you have to listen to the fans. And you have to have three or four storylines on the block. And if you see this one ain't working, you can swerve to the other one. This one isn't working. It's like climbing. We always say branches on a tree, right? Well, it's like climbing up the tree. If you start to go out on the branch and it's creaking, You're not going to keep walking on it. You're going to walk on a different branch, right? Well, that's what you got to do as a writer. You got to say, this is the way we want to go, and it's not working. Backtrack. Go this way. This one's not working either. Okay, how about this one? Oh, okay, this one's working. There you go. To only have one possible storyline for any long-term storyline is a mistake. You have to say we can go in these various directions. Let's base it on what we see the fans want. Let's base it on audience reaction. Now, you don't have that capability with a movie. You don't know what the fans are going to think until they see it. But wrestling affords you that opportunity. Wrestling lets you tell a tiny little bit of the story and feel out the audience. What was the reaction? Was there a big reaction to it? No? Okay, maybe this is wrong. You can take the pulse of an audience. You can't do that in a movie. So wrestling writing a little bit easier. If you pay attention. Now, as far as this Sami Zayn skit, let's get to that. Sami Zayn forced basically everyone to break character by saying that Jey Uso wasn't feeling very Usy. And I guess he caught Roman Reigns and Jey Uso by surprise, who probably didn't know the line was coming. Is that okay? The answer is, short answer is yes, it is okay. It's okay because it wouldn't have been okay probably 10, 12 years ago. It's okay now. Because everyone, number one, just because you're serious doesn't mean you never, ever laugh. So even if you say they broke character, well, did they break character or did they both just have so much? Have you ever been so mad at something that you can't help but laugh sometimes? Have you ever gotten so angry and then something dumb happens and you just laugh because it's just your anger flows out of you? You can make that argument. But how many situation comedies did we see that were taped live? Carol Burnett used to do it all the time, right, where the audience would crack up every time they couldn't keep a straight face. And those moments became golden moments, you know, that people say, oh, remember that time where they totally lost it and they couldn't help but laugh? You can go on YouTube and find those moments. This is one of these moments. The only thing it does do that you might say is negative, or you could say is positive, is I think it endears the bloodline to the fans. They say, they're nice guys. They're all cracking up. That was fun. We got to see behind the curtain for a minute. We got to peek behind the curtain and see the real deal. And Sami Zayn caused that because he's so funny. That's cool. I'm all for that. But then you got to understand that when you start to do things like that, you are going to make them feel more face like Mike as opposed to heels.
Right. And well, also what that led to is I guarantee you that whole thing about Sami Uso was something that Roman Reigns came up on the fly.
I don't know. Maybe they got a storyline where they're really going to, you know, knight him, Sami Uso, I don't know. But what I do know is they've now seen the audience reaction. And they've seen that there has been a different reaction than the bloodline was normally getting. There's not a ton of heat anymore. A lot of people who are saying, Roman Reigns, screw Roman Reigns, I can't wait till somebody beats his ass, they're not really saying that as much anymore. They've lightened his character a bit. And it's now Jay who's becoming the hothead. Jay who's becoming the one that fans are saying, what the hell's wrong with him? Why doesn't he just shut up already? How come he's always on Sami Zayn's case? How come he's saying all these nasty things? Sami Zayn's busting his ass to try to help, and what does Jay do? Keeps putting him down. Why is Jay being an asshole? Jay's the one getting the heat. Not so much Roman Reigns anymore. Because the fans like Sami Zayn and Roman Reigns is siding with Sami Zayn. So the heat is technically being transferred, in a manner of speaking, Tom, to Jey Uso. Do we have you on the phone?
I'm here. Hey,
okay.
Yeah, Jey Uso is really, like, I think the fans are starting to really wonder why he's, so angry at Sami Zayn, but it really makes it interesting because some of the fans are on his side with it and some are not.
I think the fans are pretty much all on Sami Zayn's side, but that's the beauty of this angle if Sami Zayn is in fact the rat. Because if Sami Zayn is the rat, then every fan is going to feel like you used me. They're going to feel like Roman Reigns feels. They're going to feel like Jimmy Uso feels and Paul Heyman feels and Solo Sikoa feels, right? And they're going to say, damn, Jey was right. Should have listened to him. And all those cheers that Sami Zayn's getting now is going to turn to anger and it's going to turn to heat. Because the fans are going to say, screw Sami Zayn, man. He pulled one over on us. If they're not doing that, then, like I said, Mike, all the heat is kind of being transferred to Jey Uso away from Roman because Roman's the one who's siding with the guy they like.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, we don't know what this is going to do. And the fact of the matter is they've pretty much set up a couple of ways they could go with this thing. You know, they could carry this thing on with the Sami Uso thing if they wanted to. They could carry it on with him just being a comedy guy if they wanted to. I mean, this is the whole branches on the tree thing, right?
Absolutely. And how nice is it, by the way? We used to come on this show, 8 months ago and say, well, you know what's going to happen. You know so-and-so's going to turn on so-and-so. You know this is being set up for a match with so-and-so. You know so-and-so's going to win, and then they're going to do this. We're sitting here right now saying, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen with the Bloodline. I don't know who's right and who's wrong. I don't know what's going to happen with Bray Wyatt. I have no idea if he's lying to the audience and he's really the wolf in sheep's clothing and the guy's trying to warn the people that he is or the good guys. Or he's one and the same, or if there's new people coming in to play these characters to go against them or stay with them, or Lord knows, we don't know. We don't even know, even though we don't like the storyline, we don't even know where the Miz thing is going. I have no idea where this could possibly go. Good. That's not a bad thing. That's good. Because wrestling in itself is extraordinarily predictable. If you're a big fan. If you're a huge fan, you pretty much know who's winning most matches. It's almost impossible to fool or swerve hardcore wrestling fans. They know, oh, so-and-so's not winning. Oh, this team's not winning. Oh, this woman's not winning. We kind of know. I mean, did anybody think Emelina was coming back? Emma's and she's going to win the title? No. The matches are predictable. At least you can make the storylines unpredictable where you say, well, I have to watch because I don't know what's going on in this story. I think somebody, the bell finally went off in their head and they said, we cannot really make the matches unpredictable. Fans are going to know pretty much who's going to win 85 or 90% of these matches. So if we can't do that, at least let's make the storylines less predictable where they don't know where we're going with something. I think they succeeded in that, Todd, and I think that's a positive thing.
Oh, you're absolutely right there, like you said, with all the storylines are going on. You got the Bray Wyatt thing where the uncle with Bo Dallas with the earring. You got the Bloodline thing. That's going pretty well as well. And sort of the one storyline we don't care for that much, the Dexter Lumis one.
Yeah, but even that, again, we don't know exactly where it's going. So there's at least three storylines currently going on in WWE. We're not 100% sure where they're going. We're also not really 100% sure where Liv Morgan is going. It certainly appears as though she's going to have something to do with Bray Wyatt, because every time she appears, there's one of those QR codes. But then again, a QR code appeared when Triple H was talking to Rey Mysterio. They're not going to have anything to do with it. QR code appeared when Austin Theory was backstage. They're not going to have anything to do with it, so they could just be swerving you there. We're not sure. That's the good part. When you're not sure, that's kind of what makes you tune in, Tom, and get you interested.
And as I said before, you know, it gets everybody talking. There's a lot of storylines going on, a lot of information to the storylines. Wonder where this is going. And even if some of the wrestling fans are like, oh, I already know where this is going, and it doesn't wind up going that way, you're like, oh, man, this is really interesting. Okay, so now I don't know which direction it's going. And it keeps you guessing. It keeps us talking. It keeps us guessing. It's really not – the storylines are not predictable. I have no idea where the Bray Wyatt thing is going. I could have predicted if this was 8-9 months ago. I could have told you where it was going.
Yeah, that's my point. And even on some of the side angles, I mean, if you watch the Elias thing, okay, Elias comes back, and Matt Riddle comes in and says he's a big fan, and obviously, you know, the whole Seth Rollins thing, he's not a fan. But at the same time, we saw very clearly that Elias was about 1 second away from smashing the guitar over Matt Riddle's head when the Alpha Academy came up. So now we are looking at, well, what's Elias going to be like? And the beauty of the Elias thing is there's going to be people who say, well, Elias is absolutely right. I mean, Riddle's just annoying. He's interrupting. He's always got to be the center of attention. He doesn't, you know, every single time Elias comes out, he's already been told, I'd like to do my performance. How would you feel if you were out there and some idiot came with bongos? And then there's people who are like, oh, I like Matt Riddle. And Elias is being a hothead. So you've got some wiggle room in there, Mike, and again, that's sort of an unpredictable thing of where that's going, so that's good.
That is an unpredictable thing of where that's going, and it is really good, but here's something else that came out of SmackDown. We talk about how improved Ronda Rousey is as a wrestler. Well, she made Emma look like a million bucks. It was a short match, don't get me wrong, but she made Emma look like a million bucks.
No question. Yeah, and gave her a lot of offense.
Yeah.
So that's
what was good. That's how good Ronda Rousey is becoming. Now, granted, it did advance the story. She did a heel thing to win the match, but again, and after the match when she was backstage with Shayna Baszler, you know, it looks like they're going to get together and be a heel group, but we'll see about that. But again, like I said, Tennille Dashwood went away and became a star, right? She had a very good 5 or 6 years away from the WWE, you know?
Right.
And Triple H probably saw that. And he probably said to himself, I don't wanna bring her in and make her nothing, make her a comedy person, make her nothing again. So he's trying to rehab Emma.
Yeah, and I think she's going out with Madcap Moss, so that probably didn't hurt. Moss, again, was on the card. He lost to Karrion Kross, but Karrion Kross gave him plenty of offense. Yeah, I mean, listen, the Ronda Rousey thing, they're trying very hard. I know they thought, we're making her a heel, and then the fans just start cheering her. Well, whoever wrote the stuff that was trying to make her a heel was an idiot. Bouncing around security guards who was called in by an authority figure who called her a bitch does not make her a bad guy. It makes her a hero. to most people. Being badass and, you know, just charging forward when most people would try to back up makes her a hero, doesn't make her a villain. This one that they did would make her a villain. However, I still caution them that you didn't do that great a job because I don't think Natalia is that popular. Natalia, last time I seen her, was a heel. So I don't know why you didn't have a face that fans like be put in that position. And then certainly Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler would have been the bullies in that situation. I don't know if you can make a really good heel off of trying to make the fans have sympathy for Natty. I'm not sure that works. But at least you tried. And obviously there's something going down between Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler. I don't know if they're going to form a group or an alliance. I don't know if they're going to add more people. My thought process is I don't know why you want another bad guy group. You've got Bailey's group. You would think Ronda's group would be the one that would go against that, but we'll see. We'll see. Now, the one that I'm most worried about in SmackDown, the storylines that I'm most worried about, is Karrion Kross, and I'll tell you why I'm worried about it. First off, let me say this. Both him and his wife, from everything that I have heard on interviews, shoot interviews, and everything else, absolutely get professional wrestling. They absolutely 100% get it. Seems like a very nice guy, very hardworking guy, very humble guy, somebody who is willing to do whatever to stay in this sport and be somebody. So kudos to them. They're hardworking. I think he's a good in the ring. I think she makes an excellent valet slash manager slash whatever. But this isn't working. And I'll tell you why it's not working. You got a problem. Fans don't know what it is. And we're not even sure what it is. You see, when I first saw this act, I thought, what this, they're basically trying to say is that Scarlett is some sort of a prophetess or a sorceress or a witch or something. And she has prophesied that this person is going to conquer the ranks of NXT, or in this case, WWE. And her belief in him and her whatever, her vision is correct, and he's an unstoppable force. That's not what it's looking like. It's looking bad. It's looking like she's still trying to play that character, and he's just trying to play a guy that you'd see as a bouncer in a nightclub. That's not what you want. He's supposed to look different. He shouldn't even really be talking much. And you've let him have the mic. You've let him say a whole bunch of things. And there's a side that's coming across that screams to me, bouncer in a nightclub, not supernatural, or at least, if not supernatural, unstoppable force that this prophetess has decreed is going to be the new leader of the WWE. It doesn't feel that way. And she doesn't get enough mic time to explain that that's what it is. I mean, if she got on television and said, this is the person I prophesied in my dreams would come to me, person who was going to destroy everyone I put in his path. This is the vision I had. And he walked out of that vision. And I'm not wrong. Then you say, I get the angle. I get it. That's a good angle. It's cool. That's not what's happening. He's throwing water bottles at Drew McIntyre. He's saying way too much. He's getting bounced around the ring by Madcap Moss. And you're saying to yourself, and she's panicking on the outside of the ring. Oh, my God, my husband's being hurt. Well, is it Macho Man and Elizabeth? Or is it Prophetess and Vision? We don't know. He's still coming out with a scary entrance. She's still coming out looking like that sorceress type thing, but it's not feeling that way. So I think they got a problem here, Tom. They've got to get the act together and decide what is it that we're supposed to be.
All right, we don't have Tom there. We can't wait that long. Okay, go ahead, Mike. Yeah, we don't know what he's supposed to. I mean, back when they were in NXT and back when they were in Impact, we knew what he was, right? We knew. And, yeah, in those two other places, he looked different. He didn't have his hair. He didn't, you know, he looked the part. And he acted the part. And she did the talking, right? I mean, when Rusev and Lana first showed up, who did all the talking?
Right.
You know? She had that accent, of course, but she said one thing that became her catchphrase is Rusev Crush, right?
Right.
I mean, that was it.
That's what my thought process was, Mike, that they were going to come in here. See, the problem is they introduced him first without her. That hurt so much. And they lost to Jeff Hardy. But that was okay because you could have, since you didn't introduce her, she could have said, I don't care what he did in the past. I had a vision. I asked whatever the gods who was going to be the next whatever. This is the person. This is the person that my vision told me will rule the WWE. And then you just have him be a world beater for a while. I'm getting a fight with Drew McIntyre first thing. Is that what you're doing with Almas? Is he getting into a fight with Drew McIntyre first thing? No. Carry him along for a while where he's beating lower, you know, first jabronis, total, you know, local guys. Then maybe step up the ladder a little bit, but not much. And little by little, like right about now, yeah, he should be fighting Madcap Moss. That should have been the top guy he ever got in the ring with up till now. Because you can always change it later. Okay, so it's supposed to be Sorceress and Vision. And then later on, after he gets beat by whoever you've decreed is going to beat him, and her vision is wrong, obviously, then you can soften it up. And you can say, well, she fell in love with him. And you know, his well-being is more important to her than her conquering the WWE or whatever. And then you've got the Macho Man Elizabeth thing anyway. Because then you've got the fans on their side because you got, oh, isn't that sweet? And it softened them up a little bit, and now we're all rooting for Karrion Kross. And you can do that later. But you've got to establish who you are now, and I don't know who Karrion Kross is supposed to be. I don't know why he's coming out with a gothic-looking sorceress-type woman with that kind of music, and he's looking like a bouncer from a nightclub. It doesn't work for me. No, I don't want him to go back and put on that ridiculous outfit they had him in, but it would be great if he shaved his head again. It would be great if he, you know, darkened himself up a little bit to look a little meaner. It would be great if he didn't say much. It would be great if he didn't get bounced around by Madcap Moss right now. It would be great if he was undefeated and you're saying he's working his way up to Drew McIntyre or some of these people who he may not win. Remember when he said, I'm coming after Roman Reigns? Well, how does that work? That's not going to work. That would have worked. That would have worked big time if you already had flipped Roman Reigns' face. And she said, I had this prophecy. I saw him standing over the broken body of Roman Reigns holding that title. I know it's going to happen. My visions don't lie. Then you would have said, this is very interesting. Very interesting. But it's not now. That's the problem. You jumped the gun on that a tremendous amount. Let me see if Tom is still there. Tom, they could have had something with this, but I think this storyline is really stalling out bad, and I think the biggest reason is we don't know what they're supposed to be.
Yeah, I mean, they really could have... It's just starting to kind of, for me, it's just starting to kind of, like, go stale. And they really could have made something out of it, and now it's just, next.
Yeah, it's very vanilla plain. Now, am I wrong, Todd, or wasn't that kind of what they were doing in NXT? They were kind of making her a prophetess, sorceress who brought this guy there to rule, right?
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, when he was in, when Karrion Kross was in Impact Wrestling and also later NXT, he looked different, had the bald-headed, was bald-headed and everything, didn't wear any ridiculous gladiator outfit or whatnot. It's like, come on, he's supposed to be like a dark goth guy.
Mike, the way I would have presented this, if I could go back in time, is I would have presented her first. And I would have presented her saying, in a certain amount of time, I'm going to bring someone to the WWE that the prophets have told me will rule the WWE. I'm still searching. I'm still searching for that answer. But he's out there, and I'm going to find him. And then when she shows up with Karrion Kross, the idea is she had the vision because she's supposed to be a prophetess or a witch or sorceress or whatever. She had the vision. This is the man that will do it. And by proxy, we think, well, you know, is she wrong? Could it be right? And so if that's the case and you want to present her as legit, we say, oh, my God, she's had these visions and they all seem to be coming true. I see him doing this, and then that's what happens to somebody. It leads up to fighting the champion or fighting somebody big who you say, oh, man, you know, this is good. But the way they're presenting him now, you know, it would be like Paul Bearer coming down with, you know, I don't know, Sami Zayn. It just doesn't work. It feels as though his part of this, it's just not working for me. And it's a shame because he seems to be a good wrestler and a nice guy.
Yeah, it seems, and he gets the business. So if you really think about it, this is one of the few points where I don't know if he's sticking to what was the storyline that came before or whatever. Because remember, he came up before Triple H came back, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, is he willing to not call an audible here when he's called so many audibles before, right? And that's the thing. I mean, they call after a while, after Lana came in, after they came in, after a while, they called an audible with Rusev and Lana. How that went, and we saw. We could clearly see, and it didn't go down this minute, but we could clearly see them eventually at some point becoming Randy Macho Man Savage and Elizabeth, right? You know?
Yeah.
At some point.
Absolutely.
We didn't go that way, but yeah. But, yeah.
They could have done it. And Mike, the thing is, they had the opportunity with Karrion Kross. And what did they do? Even with Triple H, say what you want about Vince McMahon. Triple H brought him back and instantly threw him into a fight with Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns, putting him right in the center of two guys you don't want beaten that much. And what are you supposed to say? Well, you've put him right in the middle of main events. You got to build him up slow. You didn't do it. You put him right in the center of main events with guys that just don't get beat that much. Roman Reigns, when's the last time Roman Reigns been pinned? So that did him no favors. People are like, oh, see, they're putting him right in the main event. Yeah, but I don't want you to do that because then he's going to lose his fair share of time. He'd probably lose in Saudi Arabia. And then what? Where does it go from there? That's why I don't want to see Bray Wyatt in the title picture. Where does it go from there? You got no more story to tell. Let's not go to the conclusion of the movie before we even see the movie. That's the problem. Now, AEW is doing some long-term storytelling, too. This thing with MJF is going on a long time. And I clearly see, I don't care what they're saying, I clearly see a face turn come. Clearly see it. The fans are on his side. He's not acting at quite as whatever as he was. And I think they're going to portray him as the guy who's trying to stand up for AEW, or at least his vision of what AEW should be, with the people he thinks are ruining it or whatever it happens to be. They've had to really call an audible on this because CM Punk, of course, was the one who was going to be scheduled to fight him. And that didn't work out. So they've really had to call an audible. But they're resting a lot of weight on the shoulders of MJF because they know he's extremely popular. And again, tell the story slow and make it make sense because you do have a guy who can pull it off. You definitely got the guy that can pull it off. Because just as easily as he can get you aggravated, he can get you to be sympathetic to him. And I could see a time coming when he says, I came in here with the hugest chip on my shoulder, and I did horrible things, and I said horrible things, and, you know, because I was angry, and I was frustrated. In all my life, I was the guy who people said angry and horrible things to. And what did you guys do? You cheered me. When you should have moved me out of the building because I deserved it, but you didn't. And now I realize, hey, you know, I had a chip on my shoulder to the wrong people. It's not the fans I should be mad at. It's not the people who come out here to support what I love. It's the people who are ruining what I love. And those are the people who I'm angry at. That works. And you've got yourself a major, major face, I would imagine, Mike.
Right. And think about this. There's branches on a tree here with this story, because what's happening is you've got a group of guys that are coming against them with this firm or whatever you want, with this Stokely Hathaway character and the firm. Well, yep. If you're going to have that group of guys coming, yeah, he's going to go against Moxley, right? And it's probably relatively soon. But I can see a point where they're going to get involved in that match and probably cost him the title or something, and he's going to need to get some help. And well, who's he going to run to? You know, I could very well see a reemergence of that group with him and FTR and Wardlow. You know.
Yep, could happen. Absolutely could happen. Absolutely could happen, and it would make them all faces. It would be very interesting. You've got a good story to tell here, and you've got the right characters. Again, this is a little bit like the Bloodline. You not only have a good story to tell, you have the right people to tell it. So this should be a writer's dream here. Tell the story. See, MJF is such a great character that it's so easy with him, because you could literally have him say just what I had told you that he should say. And all the fans would be like, see, he never really was mad at us. He was just mad because wrestling wasn't the way he thought it should be, and he was taking it out on the wrong people. He kissed the fans' asses for a while. And if it isn't working, you can just have him come out in the ring and say, ah, you idiots believe that. I just needed you guys to cheer for me for a while, so I got all the big matches and I got all the TV time and I used you because you're idiots. And he's back to being a heel. It's so easy. When you have a character like him, it's so easy to change things in midstream if it ain't working. So you've got a blessing in disguise here. That's why I say, you know, maybe AEW fans agree with me and maybe they don't. I'm not saying he's the best wrestler there. He's not. But he is the best character there by far. And he's the best one that you, if you're a writer, you can work with and say, my God, there's so much we can do. And he'll pull it off well. Thing about him. You've got that guy, and he's homegrown, kind of. I mean, you know, he's not a guy left over from the WWE. Put it that way. You've got that guy. If there is a guy currently on this roster that is a superstar that you identify with AEW, if you're going to pick one guy and say, I can only pick one AEW wrestler to buy an action figure of, guess who they're going to pick? They're going to pick MJF. because he got a million Chris Jericho figures in WWE. We got a bunch of Dean Ambrose or Moxley figures in the WWE. The guy that's homegrown that represents the AEW, in my opinion, is MJF, Todd. So you got to work with him.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with the members of the Pinnacle, that like you said, they should like sort of reunite. Not just as faces, but be like a neutral stable. Just go after that firm people in the AEW.
Yeah, I think this, you know, I'm not sure where that storyline's going, but I think Mike is right. I think the firm is probably going to turn on him, or maybe accidentally, maybe on purpose, I don't know. But that's where I think it's going. But either way, MJF is one of those rare people. If you want to compare him to an actor, compare him to those actors that, let me give you an example. John Candy was one of those people. John Candy as an actor could make you laugh and think he's a, you know, he's a silly moron, he's a clown, ha ha ha, he's doing this, ha ha ha, he's a goof. And 2 seconds later, he could be dead serious and really get your sympathy like he did in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. He had the ability to change what you thought of him very quickly by his demeanor. One moment you're laughing at him, the next minute you're crying with him. Those guys are rare. They're rare in Hollywood. They're rarer in wrestling. And he's one of them. So, yeah. But it's not his wrestling skill that's going to get him there. It's that ability to have the fans really care one way or the other about him, and he has it. That's important. I was listening to an interview with Val Venus, and he said something very, very wise, I think. He was talking about who he went to for advice, and he said, well, it depended on what I wanted. He said, if I wanted to... you know, the connection with the fans and how you got that special magic. He said, you know, I would talk to Austin sometimes, but Austin was a bit standoffish. And, you know, he would love to talk old school wrestling and how things worked, and you could pick things out of that and use it, but he was very protective and he didn't give too much away. Whereas The Rock, he said, was very open. You could talk to him about, you know, how you make that connection. The problem was Austin made the connection knowingly. Austin made the connection saying, I have to make a connection with this crowd, and how do I do it? So I truly feel The Rock made the connection just because he's The Rock. Like, you can't teach that. He just had that charisma. So if you're asking something like, how do you do that, he don't know. It just was in him. So he said, that's who I went to talk about how to – reach the fans, but I didn't go to either one of them about wrestling because I didn't really particularly think they were, you know, great wrestlers. They were just really good at reaching the crowd. I would go to the Chris Benoit's, I would go to the Dean Malenko's, whoever, talk wrestling, William Regal's, and they would, I want to learn this move. What do you think about using that move? He goes, those are the guys that you went to for that. So it depended on what you wanted. Well, that's exactly what I'm talking about, Mike. MJF has that intangible. And if AEW doesn't use that and squeeze every bit of juice from that orange, I think that's going to be a signal that they're not good at what they do.
Right. You know, we made a big stink about MJF crying for a bigger deal in the middle of a deal, right? You know, in terms of his contract, right? But he's well worth whatever you're going to pay him, because you know that when his deal comes up, whenever it does, if it's this year, next year, or 5 years down the line, that Triple H is paying attention.
Yes.
You know that, right?
Oh, absolutely. Did we lose you? Go ahead. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely right. And listen, they'll say, you know, MJF was wrong for trying to renegotiate a contract in the middle of a contract. You signed it. You signed it. You deal with it. You can't have a ball player saying, you know, I signed for 3 years for a certain amount of money, and then because you win 18 games your first year, say, oh, no, I'm not playing unless you up that. That's not fair. However, I understand his point. He understands very clearly. He's not dumb. He understands very clearly the value he has to that company, and it is immense. It's an immense value. And the WWE is going to pull the purse strings. You wait and see. They're going to pull the purse strings. And because they see it, they don't care if he ever wins a match. Believe me. They don't care. They just figure, get him over here, let him use the mic, let him do whatever he's going to do, whether he's going to manage, whether he's going to wrestle, whether he's going to do both. It doesn't matter. We need that character. We need that person on the mic. He's kind of CM Punk without the drama. He's kind of the CM Punk that you can count on to deliver what sounds like a pipe bomb, but he's smart enough to realize where my limitations are, plus he's not a dick. And he's not poison in the locker room. They see that. That's why the people are saying, oh, the WWE's going to sign CM Punk to go against Roman Reigns. No, they're not. They're going to wait till this contract's over with MJF and give him all the money they'd have to give CM Punk. You think they're going to give CM Punk a bazillion dollars when you got MJF coming up? There's no possible way. CM Punk's a 40-some-odd-year-old man with a history of bad injuries, injury-prone, and a history of bad behavior in the locker room. There's absolutely no way that they would chill out and break the bank for him in a year's time or so, a couple years, a year and a half. They could have MJF. Who's a much better version. So I think that's where the money's going to go, Mike, eventually. So Tony Khan's going to have to open up the purse strings too. Now, if it is a competition between just money, Tony Khan's going to win.
Oh, yeah. And think about it. If he's worth, what, $4 or $5 million to Tony Khan right now, what's he going to be worth to Triple H, you know, in 2 or 3 years, you know? I mean, what is he, 26 years old now, MJF?
Right around
and
there.
He's just coming into his prime, and at 30, you can get another 10, 12 years out of him at a very high level in the WWE. So, I mean, think about it. If he's getting $5 million right now, what's he got? What's the WWE
going to
pay him?
See, I don't know if the WWE, again, if it's just about money, the WWE is not going to win that war. They're just not, because Tony Khan could open up the purse strings and give an outrageous amount of money. The problem with that is this. If MJF gets an outrageous amount of money, all of a sudden all your other performers are going to say, where's mine? So you got to be careful of that, too. You can't just say, I'm breaking the bank to keep MJF, because then everybody's going to say, well, then you better be breaking the bank to keep me too. And pretty soon your payroll is going to be so high, there's no way you could make that money. So at some point you have to say, well, I can't give you that much, because if I do, everyone else is going to want to raise and I can't afford it. But Tony Khan can still outbid the WWE. However, the WWE probably has more to offer. Because the WWE, more eyes are on the product by double, if not triple. They have more notoriety and more things where they go on talk shows and they appear in movies and they do this, that, and the other thing. And if MJF, and I suspect he is this type of person, would rather be a superstar than a pro wrestler, so to speak, he's going to want to go to the WWE. He's going to want to go where the most eyes are, even if it's not quite the same amount of money. Because in the long run, I think he thinks he's going to be better off. So this will be a very, very interesting war when it happens. I don't know who's going to win it, Mike, but because I don't know what's on MJF's mind. I don't know whether it is the person with, you know, who pays one penny more, or if it's what's best off for my long-term career. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. And I mean, look, he could have a future in acting MJF, you know, at some point. I mean, we know what The Miz has done. And, I mean, he could be the next Miz,
MJF.
Yeah, and maybe even better, because The Miz, who obviously AJ Styles says is the best heel in the business, if he had one weakness, it probably was that fans didn't consider him, and I think they're wrong, but fans didn't consider him really, really good in the ring. I think he's very good in the ring. I think fans think MJF is better in the ring. MJF is not, you know, five-star wrestler, okay? He's not Daniel Bryan. But he's more than adequate. His size is a factor. There's no question about that. The WWE has, you know, in the past had some problems with that. But now again, before when we were talking about Vince McMahon, it would have been logical to say, I don't know, man. Vince can say what he wants. When he sees MJF, all 5 foot 8 of them, he's going to be like, well, what? But I don't know if Triple H is going to be that way, because there's Johnny Gargano, there's Tommaso Ciampa, there's Finn Balor. You know, he's doing a lot with them, so we can't even guarantee that now, Mike. So that's what will make it real interesting.
There's AJ Styles, you know?
Yep.
You know, so, and yeah, granted, AJ Styles is a really, really good wrestler, but he's no bigger than he's no bigger than MJF, you know?
Not
so
much.
And look at the amount of people. At one point, we were hearing that, oh, we want to get bigger, right? The WWE, what, last year, whatever it was, we want to get bigger athletes and this, that, and the other. Well, they had them, and they let some of them go, and now they're dealing with that. But we now got a whole crop of these MJF-type athletes that aren't that big, that are probably better wrestlers than, say, Braun Strowman or you know, somebody like that. But they're good. And you need a mix. You absolutely need a mix of these guys. You need the AJ Styles, the Miz's, this. But you also need the Braun Strowmans, the Bobby Lashleys, the Brock Lesnars. These guys, those,
no,
those type of big guys, you know? You need those
guys. And listen, AEW did the right thing. They put him with Wardlow, right? It was a pretty big guy. So then you were like, well, okay, he's a smaller guy, but look at the backup he's got. A la Shawn Michaels and Diesel, remember that? So, yeah, I mean, they did the right thing with him. They brought MJF along well, but in the end, I don't think they knew what they had. MJF kind of understands the psychology, I think, of wrestling better than a lot of people who are better than him in the ring. And when you understand the psychology of wrestling and you can reach the audience through that, that's better. That's better than a perfect, plancha, or that's better than a perfect super kick. I'm sorry, it is. I know fans get mad when I say that, but it's the truth. That's what's going to get you the big money. Val Venus himself said, was The Rock a great wrestler? He said, hey, you know, he said, I love The Rock. The Rock was always so kind to me, so wonderful to me, the most approachable wrestler maybe ever for a guy that big. He said, usually when guys get that big, they don't want to talk to guys who are so far beneath them. He said, The Rock was never that way. Extremely approachable guy, very friendly guy. But was he a good wrestler? Hell no. He was a terrible wrestler. That's what Val Venus said. But what he did have was the ability to reach out and grab that crowd like nobody else. And he said it was amazing to watch. You know, we'd watch with our jaws open and just say, where do you learn that? You kind of don't. You kind of just got to have it. And he has it. And he said, believe me, I wanted it. I talked to him about it. How do I improve? But, you know, some people are born with it. Well, I think MJF is born with it. You got a good one there. That's your blue chipper, I'm telling you. You don't want to lose your blue chipper. That would be the equivalent of the WWE losing Shawn Michaels during the war with WCW. That would have been bad, really bad. And that's the equivalent. So, Todd, I think they got to stick with MJF. I think they got to run with him. I think they got to make him one of the focal points of AEW if they're going to succeed.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with MJF, they got to stick with him with the what he's doing, and don't have him change the formula of MJF. Just keep it as the same.
Yeah, he's got the ability to mix it up. You could do whatever you want with the guy. Long-term story tell this guy. He's interesting. Don't rush him into anything. I know losing CM Punk was a big, blow. But don't rush him into anything. Tell the story slow. Let it play out. Let him have plenty of airtime. Fans are enamored with the guy. The fans are hanging off every word he says. Keep him talking. So overall, is long-term storytelling going to be good for wrestling? I think yes, because I think the fans who have never seen it, the fans who are 16 and 17 and they just start, or even if you're 15, you just started watching wrestling and you never really experienced long-term storytelling and you think, oh, no, it shouldn't be that way. When you see it, you initially might say this is taking too long, but when you get the payoff, then you're going to say, oh, it was much better. I'm glad I waited. I think they're going to introduce a whole new audience of people, Mike, who have never experienced long-term storytelling into the fold. And in the end, I think that's what's going to make them really diehard wrestling fans for a long time.
I agree with you there, and that's the deal. I've said it before, maybe, just maybe, in terms of WWE, it was a good thing that Triple H had all his power taken away and he took some time off. Yeah, for his health, but maybe it gave him time to rethink things, and now he's doing a better job in some aspects than others, but maybe he's doing a better job because he had that time away. And by the way, one other thing that just happened is that they re-signed Chelsea Green,
WWE did,
I think. And apparently, Matt Cardona is hurt, but I'm worried where his contract is coming up with the NWA. And there could be,
but then again, Mike, I've heard that the WWE want him back too. We'll see what happens there. This should be an interesting time for wrestling, folks. We will be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report. Have a happy Halloween, by the way.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestling Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.